Hi there, everyone. Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Customer Centric Show. I'm Mel Telesikan, your host. And today on the interview or on the show, I speak with Phil DiBella. Now, apologies in advance. I had a bit of a tickle in my throat and was trying to muffle my coughs while we were having the interview. And even through the magic of editing, it couldn't be removed without taking out valuable chunks. So ignore me and listen to the great content that Phil DiBella is dispensing during the episode. Now, what I really like about Philip is that he is very generous with sharing information. He's just turned 41 years old. He's built an absolute empire, sold off part of that, and now is diversifying even more into a whole bunch of different things you're going to learn about today. In the episode, we talk about what he believes makes a customer-centric business, the philosophy that he adopts for his business and team, why he actually enjoys discovering mistakes or errors in processes, what makes for effective complaint handling, gives a bit of an example of what happened recently with his business, the three questions that he determines their client perception of DiBella Coffee. So the three questions that he asks people, how he determined his locations and the business models for all of his international cafe locations, how his business growth has come from anticipating customer needs, why he believes the whole concept of disruption in business is rubbish, and the dangers that are commonly made when you're expanding in business. He also talks around why he believes that it's not a great idea to hire people wiser than you or have more experience than you. He talks about the questions he asks when he selects his staff, why he believes reflection is the most underutilized but fantastic tool for business owners to be using, and his own, he shares with us in the end, a personal goal that he has set for himself. So look, great episode ahead. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks for joining me. Let us know what you think.
You're listening to the Customer Centric Show with Mel Telesikan, where we talk with successful business owners and experts to share smart ways to attract more customers, profits, and freedom by thinking about customers first. Now, here's your host, Mel Telesikan.
Philip DiBella founded DiBella Coffee back in 2002. Back then, it began as a small coffee roasting operation in the suburbs of Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. Philip ended up disrupting the market in this business in so many ways, and one of these was when they were the first to develop a system that was eventually coined the crop-to-cup system, taking quality coffee direct from farmers from all over the world to consumers in Australia and actually now internationally. Phil's current role of managing director remains at DiBella Coffee despite selling to Retail Food Group in 2014. He still sets the vision of the company and provides support and mentoring to the senior management team. Phil is an active collaborator and contributor to the community. He's been on the State Premier's Advisory Board for 3 years. He's remained as the Director of Brisbane Marketing for 6 years. He is the Director of Tourism and Events Queensland. He's on the Department of Marketing Industry Advisory Board at Griffith Uni, and that's where he was awarded an Adjunct Professorship of Entrepreneurship for his significant and ongoing work, insight and contributions. I'm really excited to have you on the show, Phil. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Mel. It's an honour to be here.
Now, can I ask you to share with us an example of a business that's customer-centric? I expect you've come across quite a few in your travels around the world, but what stands out for you the most?
Well, to me, the best businesses that are customer-centric actually have the ability to put themselves in the shoes of the customer. And it sounds quite simple. However, it really is a difficult thing to do because you're really transponding yourself from within yourself to somebody else. And I think one of the highlights for me and the best programs I've seen around the world is written by Stephen London out of the States when he did the fish program.
Oh, yeah.
At Fikes Fish Market. How do you take a boring industry like selling fish and make it so exciting that people in their lunchtime go and just sit there for half an hour watching the show that happens? The best customer service experiences I've ever had are those that actually, you know, can, again, put themselves in the shoes of their audience. And the people that do that mean most often have the best successful businesses in their industry.
That fish philosophy is fantastic, and there's actual visuals that people can actually look online and see the performance that those guys actually put on in that Seattle fish market. They are, you know, they're completely engaged. It's not just an act though; that they're very connected to what they're doing, and people just love it. Come back for more. So do you think, can you think of an example locally or internationally that you've experienced recently that stands out as doing that for you?
Well, Virgin, I fly a lot, and flying's not as glamorous as it might seem if you're on a plane every week or sometimes, five times a week. Mm. And Virgin recently, there was an incident where, I'm a chairman member there and they didn't have any spare, and I like to travel business class, right? I mean, with my great athletic body, it's a bit more uncomfortable traveling,
sure,
in economy. So I prefer business class, and it's not because I'm more hoity-toity. It's purely because, obviously, the
comfort.
Seats are larger and have more space. But there was an incident where, my EA had forgotten to book one of the legs of the travel, and they actually prompted us by ringing us and saying, well, we know that his customer profile is that he travels business class most of the time. We noticed that he's traveling, four or five flights in this week, but there's a flight missing. Just want to make sure you didn't, it wasn't missed, and it's okay if you've booked it with another carrier.
Wow.
And the way they handled that was brilliant because, one, most people just follow procedures. And if they'd followed procedures, I would have been stuck halfway around the world missing a leg of my seat. Or two, they would ring and say, why did you book that leg? Why did you book another leg with somebody else instead of us? It was done with total care. It was done, compassionately. It was done from a friendly space. But more importantly, it was done because they put themselves in the shoes of the customer by saying, well, if this person truly did forget to book the flight, imagine what he's going to feel like when he's stuck somewhere and he'll miss his interconnecting flight because someone's made an error. So that's probably one of the most recent, examples of, to me, what we call customer service. We call it dedicated to deliver. I think the problem with customer service sometimes is that people think saying hello, smiling and being nice is customer service. That's not. That's politeness. There is a difference between customer service and politeness. So to me, customer service is in fact when a team is dedicated to deliver.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes down to the people for sure. I like that there's that preempting of what your potential problems could be, either that it was an overlooked flight, but also that they've obviously created the systems that can, I guess, bring alarm, sets off alarm bells to say that, hey, there's a leg of the journey that's missing. And I wonder whether that applies to everyone along the way or whether that's for their preferred customers. That'd be interesting to determine.
Well, it would be. It would be. I mean, we saw it in our industry. I mean, another example I can give you in our actual industry is very simple. A lot of people want to use reward systems. Now, okay, we say, well, reward systems for rewarding your regular customers is step one. Why not take it a step further? Because reward systems become expected, right? I come in, I swipe my card. There's nothing engaging about that. How about knowing which customers frequent your business and every 2 weeks shout them a coffee?
Yeah.
One, it means that you're paying attention to who comes to your business. Two, it's an unexpected surprise. It's a dedication to deliver. It's an unexpected reward, which holds a lot more warrant and weight than something that's expected. And that's just because we're creatures of habit and we're humans. I mean, something that's expected is not going to be taken with as much pizzazz as something that's unexpected.
That element of surprise definitely has its worth. Now, you mentioned before, you were sort of alluding to staff being the integral part, and I think about putting yourself in the shoes of the customer and thinking about all of the steps they go through when they go to buy something in a cafe or elsewhere. So can you talk us through what it is that you believe that staff need to be doing to develop those relationships? You said those basic manners are important, but can you talk about how perhaps you map out the customer journey when they come to you and how you can, or when they come to your cafe, because I know you've got cafes now as part of the business, how do you actually go through that process to be able to explain to staff so that they can make sure that whole process is really streamlined?
Yeah, I'd love to claim this as mine, but it's not. But hopefully the listeners will love it and it's easy to adopt. And it's actually from Steve London's Fish, and we've called it Fishilosophy. So we have a thing called Fishilosophy, which very simply follows four steps. One is choose your attitude before you get to work. Mm. You're going to have hustle and bustle. If you've got kids, something's going to go wrong in the morning. You might miss the bus. Something might have happened. Your pet might have died. Things are going to happen to us before we get to work that are going to affect our mood. The way that the system we've got in place is to neutralize that is to tell people choose your attitude.
Mm-hmm.
If your attitude's going to be bad at work, don't come to work today.
Yep.
So if something's happened to you before you get to work and you won't be able to choose your attitude while you're at work, don't turn up. No. Step two is be present. There's nothing worse than when somebody's talking to you, when somebody's trying to engage with you, that you don't look them in the eye, that you are not visually present. If somebody's communicating with you, then you should be engaged with them. So step two is obviously being present. Three is have fun. Where it's proven the environments and the people that are having fun at work perform better. You know, the people that are having the regular breaks and, you know, rather than having a half-hour lunch, you know, we give our staff a choice. Do you want 10 minutes every hour or do you want a 30-minute break? Your choice. What motivates you better? What type of, worker are you? What works for you better? So we give them the choice. So have fun at work. Enjoy what you're doing. You know, again, it's all fish philosophy. And four, which is the most important thing, is make a customer's day. Now, that's harder. That's the hardest part of the four-step process. Again, as I said before, customer service is not saying hello and goodbye and smiling. That's just being polite. And polite is not making a customer's day. The time that something really stands out, and this is, you know, hard not to sound sadistic, but it is what it is when something goes wrong. We actually love it when something goes wrong. Because when something goes wrong, that is your opportunity to actually make a customer's day. And we had an incident yesterday where an online order didn't make it to the customer. He'd been chasing it for 3 days. Our team here had followed the procedures to a T, except no one bothered to ring him the next day to see if he had gotten the order, because every time he rang, he received four different people to talk each day. But they did the system perfectly. They just didn't ring back the following day to say, hey, did you receive your order? They just assumed that the delivery driver delivered it, being an external company. When he brought it to my attention and through my EA, it was a no excuse, but it was simple. That's not good enough. I'll be talking to, obviously, the team to ensure that they follow up. I'll also be engaging with the courier company. However, what does it mean for you? I don't expect you to pay for this order, and I'll be sending you one of my best reds out of my wine cellar because I know that you actually enjoy red wine.
Yeah, wow. So, apologising and making good, right?
And it's not even the apology. You know what it is that you're actually saying, you're not making excuses. Mm. So it's what you're not doing rather than what you are doing. You're not making excuses, right? You're not blaming somebody else, and you're not making them feel insignificant.
Yes.
And that is what we call make the customer's day. And as I say, the easiest way to make a customer's day is when something goes wrong. It's very hard to make a customer's day when everything's working beautifully, you know? And there's a lot of businesses out there that really don't work on that last part. And it is a hard thing to do, because if the listeners are sitting there right now thinking about it, how can I really make somebody's day? How can I make a customer's day in my industry? It is a lot harder than what we think it is.
Yeah, it is. And as you said too, it's about that opportunity for reflection. So is that part of the procedure now going forward, that even if there is a glitch in the system some way, that you feel like it's taken care of, that you actually confirm that it's all taken care of?
Correct. We use every time something like that arises, we use it as an opportunity to get better. And what I mean by that is, I just came out of a meeting this morning, which is less than 18 hours after the incident happened, and I've said to my general manager that he needs to work with our online manager in the next 3 weeks. I want 100 people surveyed that have ordered from us, and I want three questions asked. What was your experience like with Dabella? What would you do better to make the experience better? And would you recommend us to anybody? Now, I'm going to have, by the end of this month, 100 people research that I can look at their responses to that, and that all came off the back of what happened yesterday. Now, we pack over 200 orders a day online. That was one incident. People would say, I'm overreacting. You know what? It's what I'm prepared to do that others are not prepared to do that's going to make me successful.
Yeah, 100%, absolutely. Now, do you mind sharing with our listeners, since Retail Food Group has, I guess, taken ownership of Dabella and you're still in that managing director role, can you explain to us, from what I can see, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you've sort of gone from predominantly B2B business and you're now branching out internationally into a B2C scenario with cafes. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, it was something we were always doing before the RFG sale, but it's an opportunity, and the B2C opportunity that we're chasing is in the emerging countries. So countries like India, the Philippines and Manila. Manila's going gangbusters. You know, India's going gangbusters. Mm-hmm. They're all emerging countries when it comes to cafe experience. So in emerging countries, we're looking at the B2C model. In countries that obviously already have a strong coffee and cafe culture, we're going with a B2B model. So the States, is a B2B model with a Devella office now in LA supplying cafes and restaurants, whereas Manila and India, we've gone with a B2C model.
And so is it competitive there? I know you say it's emerging, but is there still, are you the only ones in the market on this scale, or do you have competitors? Who else is in that space?
Yeah, look, there is competitors, and it's a very strategic move, Mel. What we do very, very, unless we wanted to be the pioneers and spend millions of dollars, which therefore puts you at risk, we followed the companies that have entered these markets and are doing well. And what we hope to do is obviously better the experience. And what I mean by that is, and it's a real, it's a well thought out strategy, is that Starbucks are in Asia. They've got a lot more money than we do, and they've got a lot more resources and prowess in, you know, researching markets. So if they're doing really well in Asia, then Debella can do really well by obviously taking that coffee experience to the next level. India is exactly the same. You know, strong chains over there. Cafe Coffee Day is the biggest chain over there. We had a look at their model. And it's one of my philosophies in business is research the people that are doing things wrong, not the ones that are doing things right. Because if I research companies that do things right, I become an imposter. What I do is look at the companies and say, how can I do that better or different? And is there a market for it? So Cafe Coffee Day is an amazing business in India, and they're very successful. However, they're targeting the convenience trade. They're targeting the people that just want to grab a coffee and go. They're not targeting the specialty coffee market where people want to sit around, meet, have a coffee, enjoy, you know, enjoy time with their friends. So we've created an experience that taps into that market, and that's why that's rolling out successfully. Manila is very similar, very strong Spanish influence. People are getting into coffee, but there's nowhere that people can really go. And in Manila, they're real foodies. So they're all looking for this, you know, it's full of bloggers, it's full of social media, Instagrammers. So there they're looking for anything that looks wow. So we're producing, we're matching amazing coffee with amazing food and sweets and desserts. And that's getting us a lot of traction in Manila. So it's you know, the one model fits all does not work. There's different cultures around the world for different reasons, but the business principle is always the same. If you're not solving a problem, you don't have a business.
100%. You're from what I've seen online, the actual locations look very boutique. They're very elegant looking cafes. Compared to the, are you actually I know that you said it's differentiated, but do the stores look the same in those areas, or are they actually different from country to country?
No, totally different, because it's obviously different economies of scale. You know, rents in Manila are a lot cheaper than rents in India. In India, you won't find, in Mumbai and cities like that, you won't find a full lease site. So in order to find a site, you need to really be, you know, in with the agents, or you need to, you know, you need to have a strong brand where the landlord wants you in there, because you won't see a full lease site. Therefore, the rents are more expensive, so your footprint's a lot smaller. In Manila, you can have a bigger footprint because the rent's cheaper. You know, that's why I'm saying it's part of the one model fits all is not correct anywhere. And obviously, you know, look at Starbucks, you know, which is one of the world's best in terms of growth and expansion, didn't work in Australia because they tried to roll out their model in Australia the same way they did overseas, and it didn't work. You have to find, while you've got to keep the essence of your brand and what you stand for, you've still got to work within your environment. And work within the cultures that you're embarking on. And that's something that we've learned along the way by looking at the companies that have failed. You know, it's not being sadistic, but I'd rather learn from someone else that's failed and spent their money than waste my money.
Makes perfect sense. Now let's go back to Australia, and if we can talk about three. There's three key areas that small business owners I find are having problems with. They're having trouble with attracting more custom to their business, so they need more customers. They're looking to increase profitability. And then there's a third one, which I'll talk about and ask about in just a little minute. But what would you say is in Australia, in our market here, for business owners who are looking to attract more customers, what is it that they should be doing? What's your thoughts? Because I know that you've got a handle on our market as well. What would you say is actually cutting through and consistently working?
Well, the model is solve a problem, right? But in order to solve a problem, you've got to anticipate. You've got to anticipate the problems. So the best emerging businesses are those that actually anticipate a problem. If you look at the iPhone, you know, Steve Jobs actually developed that iPhone in the 80s, but everyone snubbed it and thought, you know, everyone that worked on his team snubbed it and thought it was too futuristic. You fast forward then to 2000 when it came out, and what it did was it solved a problem, and it made it relevant. The model doesn't change. If you want to be, you know, you want to attract more customers, you need to be solving their problem, but you need to anticipate the needs, which then leads to diversification. We found that in our industry that we can't survive or grow is probably a better word. We can't grow our business if we just sold coffee. So we don't. I mean, we've got coffee's our number one selling product, but we've got ancillary items like chocolate powders and teas, you know, and sugar sticks, you know, and cold brew coffee and capsules. And we've diversified, but we've stayed within our industry. More importantly, we've kept to our brand essence. And what I mean by that is we're number one in the specialty coffee market. So the capsules we brought out are the best capsules you can buy in terms of coffee. And what I mean by that is not flavor, because flavor is subjective. We put the highest grade coffee in our capsules. Now, whether you like them or not is obviously different because that's subjective. But from a quality point, it is the highest grade you can buy. You know, I'm working on a project now of instant coffee. Why? 60% of this country still drinks instant coffee. But the instant coffee that I will end up with will be the highest grade instant coffee around the world with no chemicals.
Okay.
Now, if I'm not able to do it, I won't release the product. But we're a fair way down the track. I will be able to do it, and then I would release it. So I'm diversifying in my industry. I'm staying true to my brand essence, but I'm anticipating people's problems. And the anticipation is that people are still going to drink instant coffee because it's easy, it's convenient, and it doesn't matter that it's not the coffee from an espresso machine and of the same quality, but there is a need for it because it's convenient. So what I do is I look at the problems that are associated and go, well, the current instant coffee on the market, the majority of it is made from offcuts, so the lowest grade coffee from around the world.
Mm.
It's the highest caffeine, and a lot of it is soaked in chemical to become soluble. So I look at the problems that are associated with that and say, how can I fix them? You know, so I'm not a disruptor, and then it's something that that it's great for the listeners to really, this will generate some discussion, I'm sure. Uber is not a disruptor. And people go, you're crazy. Well, no, I'm not. Uber did not disrupt the taxi industry.
Innovated.
Uber just looked at taxis and said, this is everything you're doing wrong. There is a business opportunity to neutralize that and build a better business.
Right.
You know, they didn't disrupt the taxi industry. They just took business away from taxis.
Just improved it, right? Innovated.
Well, they developed a business that was better. I didn't disrupt the coffee industry. All my colleagues were selling a product. We don't sell a product. We own the words, it's not just a bag of beans. We supply your cafe. We provide you with networking lists. We train your staff. We hold masterclasses. We've got a lawyer that'll look at your leases. We'll help you with marketing. We'll help you design your menu. We'll put you in touch with graphic designers. We'll put you in touch with electricians, plumbers. We'll help you expand and look at other sites for you.
Wow. I didn't know that about your business.
Well, delivering a bag of beans is only one thing that we do. So we actually own those words. It's not just a bag of beans. You've got to go above and beyond in order to expand your business. You've got to be able to anticipate people's needs. You've got to be able to solve problems. But you've still got to stay true to the core essence of your brand. So you won't find DiBella in supermarkets. You won't find us in takeaway shops. You will find us in cafes and restaurants. Not because we're arrogant, but that is our brand essence.
And so your instant coffee product won't be sold in supermarkets? You'll be sending it out yourselves?
Well, if it's going to be sold in a supermarket, it won't be under the DiBella label.
Right.
Because that would neutralise, obviously, the brand and the emotional engagement with the brand in the cafe.
Yes. Okay. All right.
So you've got to be very careful with, you know, because people get carried away with expansion. And this is something to tie it all back to your original question. When people look at it, I've got to increase revenue, there's two things that they do, right? Is one, they start bringing in products that have no relevance to their core business.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they dilute what they're good at.
Yes.
Or two, they destroy their brand essence. And, you know, meaning, oh, I need to expand. I'm going to start supplying supermarkets with my coffee. Well, the moment I start supplying DiBella into supermarkets is the day that we will lose all the cafes that we supply.
Mm, the impact that it'll have. That's
correct.
Yeah, so all of your decision-making needs to come back to your values or your brand essence in every single thing you do. So it doesn't mean you can't diversify. It just means that you need to think about what umbrella brand or what, however you're going to market will be potentially separate. Okay, good stuff. Now, my last question is around freedom. As a business owners, and you've been one for a long time now, I know that outsourcing or delegating is a big part of what you do. But for business owners who are listening, what do you say is the best way for you to be able to be using your time well to make the really important decisions instead of working within your business? What tips could you give?
Well, it's the best way that you can get it to reach the destination is by making sure that you've done every job in your business.
Right.
What makes me very strong now, you know, and I've now obviously got a big team, is that I started as a one-man band. And that experience of being a one-man band is invaluable. And what I mean by that is that I had to do every single job in this organisation. So when I sit down with any of my 100-plus team now and I'm talking to them, I can relate to them. I can relate. I know what the job should be. I know how it was done. I now understand what they're trying to do to make it better. I understand where they're coming from. Again, the key word is relate.
Mm.
This whole attitude of hiring people smarter and better than you, I don't get. People that are smarter and better than you go and open their own business. Right? You need to have people that are good enough to own their own business, but give them a reason not to. So what I say to people, if you want one strategy that really works, is hire people that are good enough to have their own business, but make sure you're giving them a reason not to go off and own their own business. You know, because there's two things that happen when people hire people. One, they either say, oh, they're dumb and they're stupid. And what I say is, if you've got a dumb or stupid employee, look at the manager, because that's truly the dumb and stupid person.
Mm-hmm.
Second, they say, I want people better than me and smarter than me. Well, if they're better and smarter, what are you doing to keep them? So what we've done well as we've grown is, one, know your business and every job in it. But two, when I've had people that are good enough to open their own business, I've developed offshoot businesses. So now I've ended up with a whole suite of secondary and third businesses that actually have shareholders that of people that currently work with me.
Okay, so can I ask you then, do you then employ people, say, without the skills but with the same sort of values that you do to help you sort of grow skill-wise together? Is that how you look at it?
Well, I've been talking about it for 10 years, Mel, which a strategy that works well is I hire on attitude and teach skill. So you can't teach anyone attitude. You can only influence attitude, right? So I hire on attitude and teach the skill. I can teach anybody that's willing and able with the right mentality to make a cup of coffee. I can teach them to roast coffee. I can teach them marketing, as long as they're willing and able mentally. So the key is hire people with the right mindset. Resumes, I rip them up. I've got quite a reputation of tearing up people's resumes.
Yes.
You know why? I've never seen a resume that says, I don't turn up to work on time, I'm moody, I'm cranky, don't come near me till 11 o'clock. And you know what? When it's public holiday, Tuesday, I'll probably take the Monday off.
I know
all things that have been in the workplace, but no one puts it on their resume.
I know that you actually ask people a specific question when they come and have an interview. Can you share with the listeners what that is?
Yeah, I do. I ask them. I say to them, what are your goals and aspirations? Where do you want to be in 12 months? Where do you want to be in 3 years? What is it you want to achieve in life? You know, where is it that you see yourself? If another way I put it, sometimes I say to them, if you had a blank canvas, draw me a picture or write me the words of who you want to be, where you want to be and what you're going to be. And I say to them very clearly, if you've got no direction yourself and aspiration, then how are you going to build a business for me or work with me in a business that is very aspirational, that is very clear on where it needs to be? If someone can't take control of their own life, they're going to take control of a team or take control of the vision and the objectives of an organization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the key to it all is, Mel, very simply, and I talk about it a lot, is that we're not in the coffee business. Lawyers aren't in the lawyer business. Accountants aren't in the accountant business. However, if you ask them, that's the first thing they'll tell you. We're all in the people business.
Yes.
All we are doing is connecting people to products or services. And you know what? It's not that hard. It's people that complicate it.
Yes, absolutely. I do recall you saying, Philip, that this is a couple of years ago now, but you did used to ask people, what was it that you did that was significant in the last business or where you're working for now? And I thought that was really valuable, because I think it was really around, and tell me if I'm wrong, was around, well, what change or what improvements and what productivity did you bring to that business? Because that's a good reflection of the potential that you have in my business.
Correct. And well, that question does several things. So that's part of the procedure, is where we ask them, that I ask them, and now my team does, because I haven't done the hiring for a long time, but I do meet all the candidates from a brand perspective and see if they're a cultural fit and all the rest of it. But it's something that I constantly ask, and I ask my team, what did you do last week that you thought was of great significance that made a change to the people in your team or to the organization? Same question I do ask to new employees, as you put it. What is it at the last place of work that really stands out for you, where you made an impact? And it's not really the caliber or the actual what they're telling me. It's how they go about it. And what I mean by that is, does it excite them? Do I see their voice pep up?
Yes.
Do I see them take ownership over it? Do I see that they're engaged with it? Do they know the impact that they made? Which is very important. I'm a big believer of self-reflection. I think that in the world, people don't self-reflect enough. And that's in two ways. One, we think we're a lot better than what we really are. And two, we don't actually celebrate the wins. So I make sure that my team do two things. You know, don't get your aspirations and your capabilities mixed up, right? So don't think that you're better than what you are, because at the end of the day, I'm just a person that started a business that knew how to tap into, you know, to what customer needs. I'm not a magician. And two, make sure you actually do celebrate your wins, because that's what keeps you fired up for what's to come.
Excellent. Now, I am going to ask you one quick question around your bringing people on that might not have the skills. You know, when I think about entrepreneurship and building a business, I think that that could potentially be a slow process. For people who are listening and thinking, well, you know, I don't really have time. I'm sort of trying to follow that lean startup methodology of get things out, test the market, make sure there are people there that are going to pay for it. What's your response to that?
If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And that's something, again, that I use and I have done from day one. If whatever's easy today will turn out to be harder tomorrow. So if the listeners really think about this, think of something that's happened in the past when that's gone wrong. It's often because it was easy to start with. It's things that are going well now were often difficult to start. And you'll hear the cliches, geez, it was hard going, but it's gone good now. Something that's hard at the beginning normally becomes a lot easier later. And it normally means that you've got a better foundation. So one is it comes back to mindset. If you're starting a business and it's easy, then why isn't everybody doing it, or everybody will do it, right? If it's difficult, then there's a good chance that it's got a higher barrier to entry, which means not everyone's going to do it tomorrow. And it's something that really is important. I use a lot of analogies. If you're building a 10-story building and you rush the first two or three stories, there's a good chance, you know, story four through to 10 is going to fall over sooner or later. If you get those foundations right, and there's some storms ahead, the obviously floors 4 to 10 are going to be a lot stronger with a strong foundation. Mm. It really is about getting things done right and properly. And I mean, I've learned some lessons along the way. You know, we were using QuickBooks. We didn't upgrade quick enough, and we blew QuickBooks up and we lost a whole heap of data. Lucky we had honest customers that, you know, came to us telling us what they owed us. But it was simple. What we didn't do well, our back end didn't meet our front end. So we were out there getting new clients and growing it, you know, astronomical rates, but we weren't bringing the whole team along for a ride and our systems. So one of our key strategic objectives now is ensure at all times that we have continuous improvement and system strategies in place.
One final question for you is around how you manage your day. How many hours a week, how many hours a day are you currently working, and was it always at this level?
Yeah, time management's important. I've got an ability of being super organised. I use technology well, so I use my mobile phone and my notes section is all set up nicely. Anytime I've got an idea for a different business or concept, it all gets logged on. I've got an executive assistant that obviously is very capable. I've got an executive officer as well that helps me bounce ideas and all the rest of it. Time management is the most important thing. I actively probably work, when you're in business and you're at an executive level, you're always working. I mean, driving to work, you're thinking about work. You know, going home, you're thinking about work. And you don't have to be a business owner to be just doing that. Workers do that all the time. What classifies, the way I really answer that is, what classifies work and what doesn't? If you're enjoying something and you love it and you're inspired, you're working all the time. Obviously, you know, physically working, probably 50 to 60 hours a week, which is not a lot. You know, I don't believe that's a lot, especially for executives.
Yeah, yeah.
But mentally working, 90% of the time that you're awake, you know, and that would be the same for anyone, not just business owners. People that are engaged and inspired and love their jobs, I'm sure the listeners would agree that they would be working, you know, they would be thinking about work and in more ways than one, 90% of the time that they're awake.
Now, can you share with us as we finish up something that you're working on? It doesn't have to be to Bella Coffee. It could be some of the other initiatives that you're connected to. What's something that's happening or in the works at the moment that you're really excited about that you wouldn't mind sharing with us?
Well, two things. One's is obviously the Instant Coffee Project. I love it when people tell me I can't do something. You know, everyone snubs their nose. Like they told me about the Martini Project, that no one could build a ready-to-drink espresso martini, and we proved them wrong. People can buy Espresso Martini by Dabella. You can have a look at the website, Martini by Dabella, and see where to get it from. They said that wasn't possible, and we did it. Now they're telling me instant coffee is not possible. And as we speak, I've got on my desk our third trial out of Germany to produce the world's first highest grade instant coffee with zero chemicals. So that's getting very, very close. And then on a personal level, because I always like to share personal stuff as well, because, you know, we're all humans and have an yes. element of personal about it, is that I've always played sports. I used to have, a Queensland ranking for tennis as a junior and played, in soccer and all the rest of it. But I've never been a runner. And I made a decision with my daughter, my eight-year-old daughter, sitting on the couch the other day, that in 20 weeks' time we're going to do that Bridge to Brisbane.
Oh, yes.
5 kilometre run. I've never run 5 kilometres in my life, I think, as a jog. I've done it on a soccer field, and I think that would be a great team bonding thing with my daughter, but also forces me to get back and get healthy and fit again. So that's something I'm working on.
Yeah, good stuff. Because you've done some boxing, haven't you, of late?
Yeah, I did 2 corporate. I've always boxed all my life, but I did some charity boxing last year and the year before. I was thinking about doing another one this year. I might still do that. At the moment, I'm lucky. My insides are much healthier than my outsides, and I've got to make sure that the outside of me looks just as healthy as my inside. So, at 40, I can't take for granted that I'm healthy internally, because I might not be this healthy at 50 if I don't get rid of some of this excess weight. So,
See,
the thing with me is I'm happy to talk about stuff like that. People say, "Oh, you're so successful." Well, no, I'm not, because the one area of my life that I haven't been successful of late, because I've been busy building a business and making sure that I still have a family life, is me personally. And what's suffered is obviously my weight. And now's the time to do something about it while the pressure's off in terms of work. I've still got as much responsibility or more responsibility because it's somebody else's money.
Yes.
But I've now had the time to, the brain space to put that into me getting healthy. So when you look at people, I suppose the moral is don't always assume that, because someone's done well in business or drives nice cars, that they think they're the most successful person in the world. Because I can assure you I'm far from that. And I need to get my act into gear when it comes to getting fit and healthy again.
Yeah, no, it's hard to achieve on all levels, absolutely, but doesn't stop us from trying. Look, Phil, thank you so much for your honesty, your openness, and your insight into what our listeners can be doing thanks to your advice and your experience. So thanks so much for your time. I'm really grateful, and I know my listeners will be. Where can people find information if they want to get updates about your new product lines and your current offering? Where can they do that?
Oh, thanks, Mel. On DiBellaCoffee.com. So DiBellaCoffee.com will have that. Or hit me up as a friend request. I use my Facebook page for business. So if they want to hit up a friend request, they can normally track what I'm doing on my Facebook page also.
Yeah, good stuff. I do that. That's how I know all of the ins and outs of what's going on overseas. It's fantastic to see. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Mel.
Thanks for listening to the Customer Centric Show. For additional smart ways to attract more customers, profits, and freedom, head on over to the website www.customercentricshow.com.
Listening. Hey there, it's Mel, still here. If you're still listening, chances are you're pondering something that we've been talking about in today's episode. Perhaps you can put it into action in the coming days or weeks. And if that's the case and you found this show to be valuable, then we'd love to ask you a favor, or I'd love to ask you a favor, please. And that's to give the show a rating or a review on iTunes. So the rating is the star rating out of 5, or you can actually give a detailed review. And what that does is that actually helps us help more business owners like yourself by sharing the wisdom from my guests with a broader audience. So a rating or review on iTunes would be fantastic. Thanks so much and have a fantastic week.